This is Mark Langdon's Bets Club.
Hello and a warm welcome to Mark Langdon's Bets Club, your one-stop shop for football betting insight. The sun is shining, we're feeling good. A top episode lined up for you today with all of your usual goodness, plus a special appearance from Racing Post Sports resident soccer supremo, Kevin Pullane. And we're going to be talking to him about all of the stats regarding teams that could well be on the beach at this point in the season. Can't wait for that part of the episode. That's coming up near the end, so stay tuned. Mark, we've had Premier League football in the week. We have to start by talking about Liverpool, who put together one of the finest performances of the season so far against Manchester United.
They did, yeah. No sign of pressure, is there, Jack? Really, as far as Liverpool were concerned, I mean, we'll get on to Manchester United a little bit later, because I do feel like one team has to play badly, really, for one team to dominate that well. But it was still an impressive enough, I think, performance from Liverpool. Thiago has earned plenty of plaudits, I think it's fair to say, since the game. I mean, he absolutely ran the show in midfield. But the front three looking so dangerous. Diaz and Salah on the wings. And Mane almost reinvented himself now, isn't he, as a centre-forward, which I didn't really see coming. I would have thought that Salah was the more natural one to play through the middle, but who knew? Jurgen Klopp knows more about football than me.
We're going to be talking about Manchester United slightly later on in the show in our match of the day, but I doubt Mark's going to be as joyous about them as he is Liverpool at the moment. Manchester City backed things up as well. They beat Brighton 3-0. I know I seem... It feels like I ask you this every week, Mark. It probably is the case. Can you possibly lean towards either Man City or Liverpool, or is it just too hard to tell in terms of the outrights?
Oh, no, I would lean towards City in terms of the outrights. They've got the advantage, you know, it's in their hands. I'm looking at their remaining fixtures, thinking, where do they drop points? And what I would say is that generally football fans are far more optimistic. You know, like, you go through the results, you just go 3 points, 3 points, 3 points, and it never works out quite like that, or it certainly doesn't most of the time. I'm just looking, where will City sort of slip up? You may be thinking West Ham away is probably the hardest game there, but I mean, they should win every match, I think, from here. It doesn't mean that they will, of course it doesn't, but I'd rather be in City's shoes. They're not playing quite as well as Liverpool are at the moment, but they have got that advantage, and I'm pretty sure Jurgen Klopp would rather be in Manchester City's position as well, because you want that destiny in your own hands. And, you know, I think City know exactly what they've got to do in terms of win every game from here on in. And, yeah, I'm looking at it thinking, well, where does it go wrong? And outside of that West Ham away game, I don't see it. And, you know, you could argue that Liverpool have got, you know, as hard a match, I suppose, when they host Tottenham. So I think I would rather be in City's position in terms of league table. I sort of nailed my colours to Liverpool in terms of FA Cup and also Champions League. But I think this is the one maybe where the quadruple bid ends.
Yeah, I must say, Mark, there's been a lot of my friends who had the Liverpool quadruple bet at a fairly big price not so long back. It's really shortened up. And we asked on Twitter to our Racing Post Sport loyal followers how many trophies you think Liverpool will win this season. 13% of the vote with just one trophy, 45%. Of the vote think Liverpool will want to win another to make it two trophies this season. 31% of people think three, and 11% of people, the least amount of people voting for the quadruple. So two, the popular answer here, Mark. I must say, I thought that was slightly pessimistic. I fancy Liverpool's chances in all of the competitions from here on in.
Yeah, I mean, but they're outsiders in sort of, well, you know, in terms of the Champions League final, if they play Man City, they'll be outsiders. They're outsiders in the league as well. So maybe two's the sensible choice. I think they might be able to get three. And I think the Premier League's where they just come up a little bit short.
I know that they will, but I'm surprised that they'll still go off favourites, though, Manchester City. Because I thought, I know you mentioned the really tough game against Atletico. I thought Manchester City looked quite off it from Liverpool's level in that final. I really did.
Yeah, agree. But I still think if you have a look at what City have done over like the last 3, 4, 5 years, it's still slightly better than, you know, Liverpool have managed to sort of fight them a lot and you know, come up pretty close. But I mean, if you look at sort of most of the stats, City have just had the slight edge. Now, whether they will over the next 12 months, who knows, because Liverpool are building you know, pretty impressive squad. But I still think if they were to play tomorrow in a game, you know, and everything equal, sort of everybody's fit, they've had the same amount of rest, you know, good week to prepare, I think you would make, well, I would make City favourites. I'm pretty sure kind of the betting would have it that way as well.
So that FA Cup semi-final win for Liverpool against Manchester City then didn't kind of sway your opinion at all?
Not in terms of the Premier League, no. And actually, I don't think it will have much bearing on the Champions League final if they do get to play each other in that competition. City had a really hard game against Atletico. At the same time, Liverpool were able to rest most of their big hitters. You know, I think you get a different kind of score at half-time if Edison is in goal rather than Stefan as well. And I just think in the end, Guardiola made too many changes. I understand why he did make the changes that he did, but I think it was just too much against a very slick Liverpool team. But as I say, you know, Liverpool can be brilliant from now until the rest of the season. They still need City to do something wrong for them to win the league. And, you know, it's never a great position to be in when you're this close to the end of the season.
From one end of the table to the other, let's talk about the kind of relegation battle. But more importantly, a change of manager at Burnley. Sean Dyche has gone. I couldn't believe it when I saw the news.
No. Was it the day after we recorded last week? Look, I think Sean Dyche will be better off out of it rather than, you know, in terms of who's going to do better for over the next 12 to 18 months, you'd make Sean Dyche favourite, wouldn't you, over Burnley. I don't actually agree, though, with the sort of the condemnation that came from all quarters. I mean, because I think if you are Burnley, what are you, you know, maybe there just comes a point where you do feel like you have to try something else. And they actually picked a more attacking team, didn't they, West Ham, on the Sunday, and managed to pick up a point. And you know, I think Dyche did an amazing job. But you saw his last game at Norwich. I mean, that wasn't amazing, was it? And maybe the owners just felt like it was better to just roll the dice again. I think that overall, Sean Dyche is going to end up better off than Burnley. But I don't know if I quite shared the kind of shock horror as what everybody else did.
You missed a pun there, Mark. You could have gone for roll the dice.
I'm in a different space today. That's the problem, Jack. I'm up in our Leeds office. If I was sat at home feeling comfortable in my surroundings, I probably would have managed to nail that one. But as it is,
have you had to put your suit on and act all professional today?
No, I haven't had to do that. But it's just, you know, that, I mean, when people go, what is home advantage, and you know, why is it so difficult playing away? I now know, because I'm doing exactly the same thing away from home, and it just doesn't feel the same. I'm sure I would have got that pun had I been sat in my home in Essex.
Look, let's get on to the top four battle discussion. Let's talk about that in our match of the day this week. We've got Arsenal against Manchester United to look forward to this Saturday. It's the early kickoff, 12:30. And it's going to be our match of the day for this week. Mark, let's start with the top four battle because it's really tight. Let's have a quick look at the table, and you can tell me who you think is most likely to qualify in the top four. You've got Tottenham on 57 points, who currently occupy fourth position. Arsenal on the same amount of points, just the worst goal difference. And then Manchester United on 54 points, 3 points behind, and a game, and they played a game more than both Tottenham and Arsenal. So your boy's in the driving seat.
I think it's very close. That Arsenal win over Chelsea has put the cat amongst the pigeons, I think it's fair to say. I very rarely sit on the fence, but I don't think it's far off being a 50-50 call here between Tottenham and Arsenal. I don't fancy Manchester United at all. I think it is a two-horse race. Spurs have got the kind of the advantage, if you like, of having that game that the two teams have got to play, was that middle of May, at home. So maybe just ever so slightly towards them. But I think Arsenal will fancy their chances of picking up sort of maximum points in a lot of their other games. The one, I think the tricky game for Arsenal actually is away to Newcastle after Tottenham, because I don't think that's not an easy game anymore, is it? The way that Newcastle are going. And so I'll be absolutely fascinated to see what happens if kind of Tottenham, you know, would they push all out for that win against Arsenal? But there's that opportunity maybe for Arsenal to slip up a little bit later on. So we'll be fascinated to see. Like, I think that Arsenal will go to White Hart Lane with a very narrow advantage. But having mentioned home advantage earlier on, I do think home advantage could be absolutely vital in that game between Tottenham and Arsenal. So it really is very, very close to being 50-50. I saw 538, you know, the Nate Silver's predictions website, and I think they've got it 50% for Arsenal, 49% for Tottenham, and like 1% for Manchester United. That's how close. I think it really is that close. So from a betting point of view, I'd probably back whoever was the outsider. And when I last looked, that was just Arsenal. Like I said, I don't like to just often sit on the fence, but I'm struggling to. I'm sort of not trusting anyone that could have a really firm opinion on it, I think.
Okay, no, that makes sense. And you say there that a prediction of a 1% likelihood for Manchester United to get into the top four, that seems generous if we're going off their performance against Liverpool. Now, of course, Mark, we know how good Liverpool have been this season. They were majestic against Manchester United, but my goodness, there's problems at Old Trafford.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I suppose it's an absolute nightmare if you're a Manchester United fan because you're two biggest rivals. And now the two best teams in the world. You know, you've got your local rivals and then kind of your arch rivals, and they're the two best teams in the world. And when you go up against them, you are likely to be outclassed. I was more protective, I would say, of United after the City game, because I felt like they didn't actually deserve the real kicking that they got from some of their former players. I mean, Roy Keane was particularly aggressive on Sky after that game. You know, I felt they played well for a fair amount of time in that game and then just got outclassed. And, you know, I don't think it does you any good to start chasing the game when it's 3-4-1 against Man City and a few minutes left, because, you know, you just end up making things worse. I'm less protective of them after what happened at Anfield. I thought the first half performance was absolutely despicable, because you can lose to Liverpool, you can be outclassed by Liverpool, but you've got to be in their face. You've got to make it difficult for them. I mean, I'm obviously a Spurs fan, as you know, Jack, and you know I grew up and sort of even beyond that, sort of the Invincible. So for a long time, sort of Tottenham were second class citizens to Arsenal. And very rarely, even if you were the worst team, did you get an absolute stroll like that, you know, because it means so much and you put the effort in. And if you do get hammered once, you very rarely get hammered twice. And yet Manchester United have lost 9-0 on aggregate to Liverpool, barely laid a glove on them. I mean, first half, you know, Rangnick said afterwards, we wasn't supposed to press like that for the first goal. And you're just thinking, is that his fault? Is it the player's fault? I mean, I don't know. It was a shambles. Bruno Fernandes, I thought, was just terrible. I mean, Pogba didn't look that disappointed when he was coming off. Looked more relieved than anything else.
It doesn't feel like they're learning from their mistakes, Mark, either, because I'd watched Manchester United. Granted, they beat, you know, us Norwich at the weekend, but for a team as bad as us, we carved them open time after time. There's been very few occasions this season where not only have we created chances but scored a couple of goals. We did that against Manchester United. And you think if Timu Pukki and Kieran Dowell can do that, what on earth is, you know, Sadio Mane and Mo Salah going to do? And just time after time, just so open.
Yeah, I think this comes down to just a lack of, I think it's a lack of effort off the ball. I mean, if you watch the way that Liverpool players work to get the ball back and then look at the Manchester United players trying to do the same. It's like, you know, it's absolute night and day. And
what's that down to then? Why are they not putting the effort in?
They don't look fit enough to me. Rangnick has mentioned this a few times about a lack of physicality. You know, Nemanja Matic can't get around the pitch, can he? I mean, I think it's hard for a lot of them. You know, Rashford, don't really see him putting in maybe the effort that he once did. A lot of the players just seem like they're jogging. They just jog around the pitch. I don't want to sound like Roy Keane. I mean, there's much more to football than just running around. But at least run around, at least sort of make it hard for the opposition. You know, Erik ten Hag obviously was appointed today as we speak. He's just got an enormous job for next season. You watch him thinking, you know, who would you keep? De Gea? Probably no reason really to get rid of him. Keep Varane at centre-back, but you could easily change both full-backs and need at least one centre-back. You'd probably want two new central midfielders to go along with McTominay and Fred that probably, you know, are above them in the pecking order. You're obviously losing the likes of Pogba and Lingard. You'd hope that Sancho would come back next season and have a much better and stronger campaign. Maybe Elanga, you know, he's shown a little bit. So you potentially got your wide players sorted out. Bruno Fernandes has been given a massive contract, so you'll have to keep him. And then you're thinking probably two new centre forwards. And these are like starting positions. These are not to, you know, back up what you've already got. I'd seen somebody say that, you know, they could give Ten Hag 200 million to spend. I just think that's not enough. Like, that is just not enough for what this team needs. But it's
funny to think, Mark, isn't it? Because I think, reading some stats the other day, I think in the, is it the last decade, maybe in the last 5 years, that their sort of spend is over £1 billion, and they're in a position where you've just said they need to overhaul the whole squad again. I mean, that must be down to just woeful recruitment.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, I suppose you'd be hoping. What you need to hope is that it has been the manager's fault. All of this has been the manager's fault. And, you know, just the only thing required is a bit of organisation. And suddenly, you know, Harry Maguire will look like the, you know, if not sort of, you know, world-class, at least be able to play at a high Premier League kind of level, you know, with a structure. And a lot of defending is about structure and organisation. I think you see that kind of, you know, someone like Antonio Conte that came in at Tottenham, Eric Dyer and Ben Davies suddenly looked a lot better than they did previously because the structure is right. So maybe you do keep Maguire and you do keep Varane. I'm not mad on either of the fullbacks. You know, Wan-Bissaka and Dallow on the right, Telles and Shaw on the left. Don't really do it for me. Maybe you have to keep Shaw because you can't improve all of these positions. But you definitely need to go again in central midfield. And, you know, if you're talking like Declan Rice kind of level, that's most of your budget gone, isn't it? You know, if you just bring in one player of that kind of standard, or a centre forward, you know, they've got Martial that they don't want. Rashford just isn't looking very good at the moment. You know, what do you do about Ronaldo? Edinson Cavani probably leave. There's so much work to be done for Erik ten Hag. It's incredible.
Does that mean you're leaning towards an Arsenal victory this weekend?
It does, yeah. I mean, they're odds against, you know, 6-5 earlier on in the week. They're into 11-10 now, but I just think they're better than Manchester United. Two wins in 9 for United, and they were very much Ronaldo inspired. He got hat-tricks in both of those games against Norwich and Spurs. And as far as Arsenal are concerned, they got that win against Chelsea. Nice bit of helping hand, really, from some awful Chelsea defending. But they probably deserved that luck because I think on XG, they could have comfortably beaten Brighton and Southampton. So, yeah, I'd go for, I mean, odds against Arsenal at home feels like a good bet to me.
There we go. On Arsenal, let's whiz through the rest of the Premier League fixtures. So many good games to get through. Let's start Saturday, 3 o'clock, with Leicester against Aston Villa, Mark.
Yeah, I mean, I don't often put up, I suppose, 8 to 13 shots, but I thought both teams to score looked pretty solid play at 8 to 13. In terms of the Premier League, Leicester are the best BTTS team in the division, 21 times that they've had both teams score. I think Aston Villa, I've mentioned it a few times, I think since Coutinho arrived, they just look a little bit unbalanced. To me, but they should be able to score. But Leicester have a lot of their qualities going forward as well.
Liverpool need Manchester City to slip up at some point from now until the end of the season. It's unlikely it's going to happen here. They take on Watford this weekend.
Yeah, the goal difference is +6 in Liverpool's favour at the moment. I'm just wondering if Pep Guardiola might fancy really taking a large chunk out of that in this game. I was going for Man City -2.5 goals. I mean, recent wins over Watford, 4-0, 6-0, 8-0. That 3-1 earlier in the season flattered Watford. City had 13 shots on target. I'm just imagining sort of Pep Guardiola thinking, you know, what if we lose at West Ham and Liverpool draw against Tottenham? Is that like a ridiculous situation? If someone said that happened sort of, you know, for the rest of the season, that would...
Believable, isn't it?
Yeah, it's believable. Then it would come down to goal difference. So I think there is an interest on City's point of view to not only win these games, but to see if they can get the goal difference back in their favour as well. And that doesn't bode well for Watford.
Slightly improved performances in recent weeks from Norwich City, but they're going up against an in-form Newcastle side on Saturday.
Yeah, Newcastle to win. They've won their last three. They're doing much better now on expected goal stats. They look a lot tighter at the back, apart from that Spurs game. When they just lost the plot for a brief period, really, either side of half-time, and the game was gone. But just heading into half-time, they were winning 1-0 there as well. They were unlucky against Chelsea to lose 1-0. Thought they deserved at least a point at Stamford Bridge. Eddie Howe's doing a good job at Newcastle. I think they're sort of looking at a top-10 finish now. So, Newcastle to win.
Remarkable, really, considering where they were a few months ago. The evening game on Saturday sees Brentford up against Mark Langdon's beloved Spurs.
Yeah, I mean, I think Brentford will draw a double chance here. Tottenham, odds
you
on.
Love Brentford, don't you?
Yeah, I do. Well, I just...
Your own team, Mark. Come on.
No, I mean, it's betting's all about percentages, isn't it? And the percentage chance of winning. I mean, I put up Tottenham, didn't I, when they were, what, about 13 to 10, 5 to 4, or whatever it was at... Aston Villa, and now they're odds on against Brentford, and I'm thinking, are Brentford that much worse than Aston Villa? Don't think they are. Won all five games when Eriksen and Tony have started. I know it's a small sample size, but they're two very important players, and I think one's return from injury and the signing of Eriksen has been the real catalyst for them picking up again. Tottenham were absolutely horrendous against Brighton, and first half against Villa were much better. So they need to improve. They might do, because it's probably a game that they'll enjoy against a pretty expansive Brentford side. But I just felt at the prices, I'd rather be on sort of Brentford not to lose.
Okay, can't knock that. Let's move on to Sunday's fixtures then. Chelsea, West Ham. Mark, I'm really struggling to kind of figure where Chelsea are at the moment. Have you got more of a grasp on them?
Not really. I think they're a team that's just massively distracted. There's obviously off-field issues, nothing much left to play for this season in the Premier League. It definitely showed against Arsenal. I mean, that was a shocking performance from them, really. Game. I mean, they've given Arsenal three goals there just through doing, basic errors, which is astonishing for a team like Chelsea that under Tuchel have really built solid foundations, haven't they? And, I felt Crystal Palace sort of just let them have it too easy at Wembley on Sunday in the FA Cup semi. Didn't really put them under any pressure. I think West Ham will have a good old go at them. And I actually think that at the prices, might chuck a few pennies on West Ham at 6-1. There's a big difference between finishing 6th and 7th in the Premier League. 6th is Europa League. 7th is Conference League. Now, I know West Ham are thinking, maybe they could get in the Champions League if they win the Europa League. But, David Moyes has shown no appetite whatsoever to rest players for the Europa League. So I don't necessarily expect him to start now. So... At 6-1, feels like a big price, West Ham.
Very big price indeed. What about Brighton, Southampton?
Do you know what? In my notes, I think I had this down as a derby. And then I thought, hold on, that's miles away. I know it's like a very long road, isn't there? The A27, M27 between them. So, yeah, it's not a derby at all. So my geography was well off there. But I was thinking it might be played whenever there is a derby. I think draw straight away. But Brighton have had a lot of hard games recently, a lot of away games. So they might not be fully at it for this game against Southampton. Southampton obviously playing on Thursday against Burnley. We don't know the result of that game. So maybe that's why I'm sitting on the fence with a draw. five of their nine Premier League meetings have been all square. So this kind of there's a trend towards draws in this fixture.
Just feels like a draw, that, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah, absolutely. Burnley against Wolves. Now, how would you rate the chances of Burnley surviving this season at this point now?
Not great. And just because Everton picked up another point, you know, the result last week against, well, the week before, wasn't it, against Norwich was a real kick in the teeth, really. And Everton, you know, nicked another, you know, really late goal against Leicester. Yeah, I mean, it's only a couple of weeks ago I was saying I'd rather be in Burnley's shoes, I'd rather be in Everton's. Now, obviously, speaking before that game on Thursday against Southampton, so you know, maybe if they win that game, it changes again. But for this match against Wolves, I was looking, never easy to work out what to say here, but no in the both team to score market. So at least one team not to score. Wolves have won one of their last 12 games on the expected goal. So the market doesn't love them. And that's why when you know, people say to me, oh, Wolves are a big price to win matches. And you know, I think some people would consider them a big price to win here at Turf Moor. On expected goals, they're just not very good. In those dozen matches that I mentioned, their average expected goal figure is 0.79 over those 12 games. So creating very few big opportunities. We know how good they are defensively. And I think whoever gets the first goal in this game, you know, it might be enough. And to be honest, I'm not even sure there will be one.
Now, we've worked out that Brighton against Southampton isn't a derby, but we can agree that Liverpool-Everton is a derby and they play each other on 4:30 on Sunday, Mark.
Oh, I mean, you wouldn't want to go, would you, if you're an Everton fan? I mean, if I had a ticket, I just wouldn't. But I mean, you know, I don't like going to 4:30 Sunday games anyway, so I would swerve it. But, oh, no, I mean...
It could get nasty, couldn't it?
Yeah, you almost feel like you'd take a couple of goals defeat if you were Everton. I mean, they've lost 10 of their last 11 away Premier League matches. And remarkably, the point they picked up was at Stamford Bridge over Christmas, wasn't it? I'm just going to go for a couple of correct score dabbles. I mean, Liverpool are about 5-0. I can't believe they've ever been short to win a derby game. But yeah, a couple of correct scores on 3-0 and 4-0. The difference in the two teams is just vast at the moment.
I saw that a good friend of the show, Jason Murphy, who's a Manchester United fan, was backing Liverpool -2 and -3 in the week. That must be tough when you're going against your side that much. Poor old Jason. Okay, one game on the Monday sees Palace up against Leeds.
Yeah, Patrick Vieira. Interesting, isn't it, how much credit he gets? I was sort of looking at Palace. They're only 4 points ahead of Leeds, who've sacked their manager. They've won the same amount of games as Everton, which you wouldn't have thought, would you? It's quite interesting. I think he's done a good job, but our colleague Bruce Millington feels like he's overpraised. I was just looking at some of the stats, and only four teams have got a lower shots on target per 90 than Crystal Palace. Yeah, so maybe they're maybe not quite as good as we all sort of think and have rated them for some of this season. Their XG is actually quite decent, so a little bit confusing there. They don't have a lot of shots, but the ones they do tend to create tend to be bigger opportunities, and they've done quite well defensively. I just wasn't sure about them for this game. Looks a bit flat, really, after they've got knocked out of the FA Cup. So I'll go for a draw against improving Leeds.
It's really hotting up in the EFL. Can't wait to see Dan Charles, where his money's going this weekend. Let's catch up with him now. Always good to be joined with EFL guru Dan Charles from the Racing Post Sport Desk. You can read more from Dan Charles on the website. Always good to check out where his money's going. Dan, really hotting up in the EFL now. Such an exciting point in the season, this, isn't it?
Yeah, League Two especially. I mean, you've got to the stage, I think, you know, two or three weeks left to go in the season. But amazingly, there's 11 teams still in the promotion race in League Two. I mean, so that's where I'm going to sort of focus my tipping this week. And two of the teams in that promotion race, Bristol Rovers in fifth place at home to Leaders Forest Green. I actually fancied the Bristol Rovers to get the win in this game they've been going fantastic under Joey Barton since sort of like the halfway point of the season. Last nine games, they've won seven of them. Easter Monday, they got a massive 3-1 win away to Port Vale that took them to within 2 points of the automatic promotion places. And I think they can beat the leaders as well. Forest Green, I mean, they look like they're going to... They only need one more point, actually, to see automatic promotion. They're probably going to win the league. They're 5 points clear of second-place Exeter. But they have had a bit of a, you know, a wobble in their form in towards the end of the season. They've only won four of the last 13 games, probably affected by injury to a really bad cruciate injury to Matty Stevens, their top scorer, who's he's missed the last few games. And that's probably affected them going forward. I mean, they'll get over the line, I'm sure, but some probably win the league. But I just think this game away to Bristol Rovers is a tough one, and I'll take Bristol Rovers to win it.
Bristol Rovers the first up. What about your second tip, Dan?
Second one, I'm going to stick with a team in on the fringes of that promotion race. Swindon in 11th place, playing away to mid-table Hartlepool. I think Swindon will probably win this game. They have had a bit of a wobble lately, Swindon. They've had a few injury problems at the back. Rob Hunt, one of the players, the regular left back, who's been injured in the last game when they lost 2-1 at home to Leighton Orient. But I do think they can win this game. They've got a really key player, Harry McCurdy, who's their top scorer. He's expected to be back from injury for this one, which is a massive boost for them. And they are, you've got to remember, they are the team with the best away record in League Two. They've had 11 away wins this season, Swindon, and they're playing against the Hartlepool team that seem to be on their summer holidays already. They've had six games without a win for Hartlepool. No goal in their last two matches. They've got injury problems piling up as well. So, I mean, they have consolidated well, Hartlepool, since coming up through the National League playoffs last year. But the end of the season seems to be tough for them. I'll take Swindon to win this one.
Swindon on the Dan Charles portfolio for this weekend. And let's complete the hat-trick of League Two tips.
Yeah, the hat-trick, it's going to be... I mean, you're always going to get teams at this stage of the season that have got nothing material to play with. That's the case with this last one here, where I've gone with Carlisle to win away to Harrogate, both in the lower part of the table, but neither team are at risk of relegation. But the two teams, the way they're finishing the season, is a massive contrast. Carlisle, Paul Simpson went in there in sort of late February. They were in the relegation zone at the time. And he's led them to, in 11 games, incredibly, they've got 7 wins, 1 draw and 4 defeats, which is absolutely fantastic from where they were at, with the same group of players, no transfer window to work with. He's done an amazing job, Paul Simpson. And I think they're going to get another win here away to Harrogate. They're kind of going the other way. They actually started the season really well, Harrogate. Early September, they were top of the league, but their form has fallen off badly. Injuries have been piling up. They've lost 8 of their last 10 games, Harrogate. The 3-0 loss on Easter Monday away to Northampton, they were missing 8 players. And when with Harrogate, who have got quite a small squad, actually, that is a real, real blow to their chances of winning games. So I think they're going to lose again here. I'll take Carlisle to win this one.
Great stuff, Dan. Just give us a quick run through all 3 of those bets once more.
Yeah, it's Bristol Rovers to win at home to Forest Green, Swindon to win away to Hartlepool, and Carlisle to win away to Harrogate.
Excellent. Dan, best of luck this weekend.
Cheers, Jack.
Now, the man I'm talking to, Mark Landon, is in fine form with his tipping at the moment. We're on a great run. So let's try and get some more winners here. And we'll start with the prop shot, Mark.
Yeah, Philly Coutinho to have a shot on target, 8-11. I mean, Leicester obviously are pretty wide open. He's second in the shots on target table for Aston Villa this season, Coutinho, which is pretty impressive for somebody that only arrived in January. You remember when Andy Gray used to urge people, didn't he, to buy tickets and to buy lottery tickets. And Frank Lampard was always somebody that bought a lot of tickets. I think Coutinho, he's another one that has a very scattergun approach, likes to shoot, and he's been having quite a lot of shots on target, takes a lot of set pieces as well. So 8-11 for a shot on target from Coutinho.
Is that a popular bet for you, Mark, the shot on target market? I couldn't imagine you getting involved that often.
Not too often, no. I mean, you know, it's more, I suppose, a kind of fun betting opportunity. And also, it's not always priced up when we do it on the Bets Club. The markets aren't always there, but for this game, they were. So thank you for the odds compilers for waking up. And actually, I did the research a little bit later on today, so maybe that's why as well. So, I saw that one. I was looking at Coutinho to score as well, but I just felt the shot on target was probably the way to go.
Yeah, we'll take that. Lovely stuff. What about a long shot?
A West Ham. Brentford and Arsenal both scored 4 goals at Stamford Bridge in recent weeks. So, I mean, I'm not saying West Ham will score 4, but that must give them some hope that they can shock a Chelsea team that, I don't know, looks very odd at the moment. Very weird atmosphere, I felt, at Stamford Bridge on Wednesday night. I don't know if you saw the game, Jack, but the Arsenal fans were singing "Just Like the Old Days, There's Nobody Here." And it was, I don't know, it's really, really just flat. And, I know there isn't much to play for in terms of the Premier League. And, they've had issues, obviously, selling tickets and stuff like that. And, the club's just, I think Thomas Tuchel's got a difficult job at the moment just to keep everybody motivated on the task in hand, which is, trying to build up ahead of this FA Cup final, which is now a kind of season-defining game, I suppose, for them.
It must be slightly nerve-wracking when you're uncertain about the future, I guess, for Chelsea fans and players and everyone involved at Chelsea. Who knows what the future holds for them? Let's talk about a treble for this week then, Mark.
Okay, Arsenal to beat Manchester United for the reasons I think we've already kind of discussed. I'm going to play a little bit safer on the Man City handicap one for the accumulator and just go Man City -2 on the Asian handicap. It's odds of about 1-2. You get your money back if City win by 2 goals. If they win by 1 goal or don't win at all, then the bet loses. Just a bit of added insurance there for the treble. I didn't want to put up a 2-on shot in a single. So we go for Arsenal, Man City -2 Asian handicap, and we'll complete the treble with Monaco to beat St Etienne. Really chasing the Champions League spot now, Monaco. 5 wins on the spin in the league. That includes victories over Paris Saint-Germain, Rennes and Nice. So 3 of the top teams in France, really heading in the right direction at the moment.
And the Naps are on a brilliant run at the moment. So let's find another winner this week.
I'm going for Arsenal. I just think, odds against at home suggest that Arsenal and Manchester United are two teams of similar ability. And I don't see the evidence of that, actually, for most of this season. I know in terms of the league table, United are a few points behind. But like Arsenal were at a terrible start, didn't they? And, since they've actually got their act together, I think that they've been comfortably better than United. And I see no real reason to, avoid them odds against.
Now, the next section of the show is going to be featuring a man who's been much requested. We've had him on before and we thought we'd get him on again today. It's Kevin Pillane talking about the Beach Boys.
We had so many tweets and questions coming in for me and Jack. You listeners, you wanted to know what happens when teams are on the beach, or are they on the beach? So we thought it'd be brilliant to get on Kevin Pillane to discuss all the facts and figures behind teams that have got maybe nothing to play for or are lacking in motivation, or maybe at the other end of the table, a team that's absolutely desperate for a victory. Should we be backing them? Is the price sort of inflated or decreased because of it? So, Kevin, welcome along.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you. Glad to be here.
Okay, yeah. So we said we'd do a feature on the so-called Beach Boys and whether certain teams get their flip-flops on at this stage of the season. I mean, what's your sort of feeling and sort of what do the stats say about teams and maybe those that are lacking in motivation against teams that have got something to play for?
I think there certainly is an effect, Mark. My own thinking on the subject has sort of evolved over the years, but I do genuinely believe there is an effect now that when teams have got nothing more to play for, consciously or unconsciously, they do sort of ease off a little bit. And alternatively, when there are teams who've still got absolutely everything to play for and they're running out of games, they do put more and more into whatever is left. It's a very hard subject on which to come down and say categorically it makes X difference or it makes Y difference, because there are different sorts of preparation for the beach, if you know what I mean. There's some teams in some divisions who are pretty much safe. They're pretty sure they're not going to go up or down, but it's not absolutely certain. And then there are other ones whose fate is absolutely determined. And also, at the higher levels nowadays, at the end of the season, you can get teams who might have, say, for example, nothing to play for in the league, but they're still going strong in a cup competition or a European competition. So it's very difficult to come up with hard, fast rules, I would say. Just to give you a couple of examples, one of the things I've looked at over the years is teams in the Premier League who become champions and what results they had before they became champions and what results they had after they became champions. And there certainly is a difference, you know, that they go from averaging overall maybe like sort of 2.3 points a game down to 1.9 points per game. You know, in terms of winning the match, they drop from winning about 70% of their matches to winning about 55 or 56% of their matches. So they do ease off teams in that category. But they're still quite good, if you know what I mean. A team that's won the Premier League, they might not carry on at the same level they were before, but they're still going on at the sort of level that you might expect for a team that's challenging to get into the top four, to get in the Champions League. So they're not as good as they once were, but they're still better than most other teams, you know.
I was just going to say, Kevin, I mean, when I've sort of thought about either backing or laying teams at this stage of the season where, you know, they've got everything to play for against maybe one that's got little to play for, I'm much more likely to back an unmotivated kind of top team than I am kind of one at the bottom, if that makes sense. Like, I'd rather back a team maybe, say, that's already secured their Champions League football for next season but can't win the Premier League at an inflated price because they've got nothing to play for. But what I don't like doing personally is backing teams at the bottom when they suddenly become like 2s on and 8-15, 4-7. You know, to start winning games, because I appreciate that they do tend to pick up a few more points at that stage of the season. But my ultimate feeling is, you know, they're down there for a reason, because they're not very good. And when you've got a team that's, I don't know, maybe averaging less than a point a game all season long, do I then want to back them, you know, at sort of 2s on to win a football match? I can quite easily leave them alone.
Exactly, Mark. I would agree with you very much. And that option you mentioned there at the end, it is always available. You can leave teams alone. You know, you don't have to have a bet in a particular situation. So if things get too muddled, you can just leave it alone. But I mean, you're talking about. It's a very good point. You've got a good team, and they might not have anything to play for anymore. But even if they tried, it'd be very difficult for them to be rubbish. And the opposite is also true. You know, when you've got, I'm talking a little bit off the top of my head here at the moment because I haven't refreshed my memory on the exact figures, but I think I won't be too far off if I say this, which is that if you get like teams in the Football League, the EFL, sorry, I should say nowadays, who are down the bottom and they get to the last game of the season, absolute last game, it's do or die, and they've got to win, and they're playing somebody who's got nothing to play for. They do get better results than they have up until now, but still, what they're getting now is sort of similar to the results of sort of a mid-table team, you know. Yeah. Are they the price of a mid-table team? Very often they're shorter, I feel, you know.
Yeah, I think we tend to remember the great escapes, don't we? And just forget about all the times teams down the bottom just lose their last couple of games and, fall by the wayside quite meekly, because, that tends to happen, I think, more often than these miraculous kind of 3-4 wins, in the last month that suddenly propels a team from rock bottom to safety. So are you saying, Kev, then that you would expect Fulham, and I don't want you to start saying that, you want to lay them every week, but you would expect Fulham, who were promoted to the Premier League in midweek, you would now expect them to sort of not pick up as many points? Or in your head, are you thinking they'll still go for the title, but the main job seems to be done?
It does. And my impression over the years is that although teams like to win the title, the most important thing for them, the objective when they set out at the start of the season, is to get promoted. And I do feel once that's accomplished, they do tend to settle down a little bit. So, I mean, it can go either way. This is not something that happens exactly the same in all situations. You can get a team who get promoted and they carry on winning every game, or it can be very different. But overall, no, looking at it now, I look at a team like Fulham, for example. And on Saturday they're playing Bournemouth, which is my hometown club, and Bournemouth are making a terrible dog's ear of trying to get the other promotion place in the Championship. I was relieved when I saw the other night that the Fulham had won and they'd been promoted, because I'm not saying Bournemouth will win on Saturday, but I think they've got a better chance of winning now that the Fulham know that they're up.
Yeah, I suppose the key point, Kevin, Each kind of fixture will have its own merits on this, but I suppose how much do you think bookmakers do they overreact to this increased motivation? Do you suspect that everybody will want to back, these teams that have got something to play for, and are they artificially short, or do you feel like they've got that kind of just about right, really, in terms of their percentages, what they're adding on for motivation at the moment?
I tend to think that if anything, they still go a little bit too short. I say too short when I'm talking about the odds compared to what the chances would be if we're able to sort of establish them as best as we're able to. But I do still feel that they protect themselves as much as they can, because I get the impression that they look out there and they look at some of these games, and even more than they would on earlier weeks of the season, that they just say that there's only one team anyone's going to back in this game. And I just think they try to protect themselves as much as they can. I personally wouldn't be a fan, and I personally wouldn't sort of encourage anyone to go out on the last weekend or the last couple of weekends of a season and back every team that needs to win against the others, because I don't think you'll be getting value prices.
No. Is there anything else that you kind of looked at in terms of motivation or sort of matches at this stage of the season that we need to discuss?
No. I think those are the main points, actually, Mark.
How about goals come the end of the season on the final match day? I know there's a lot of people like to back both teams to score and over 2.5 goals in sort of every match at the end of a season. Do we tend to get sort of more free scoring games when there's nothing riding on matters?
My hairdresser likes to do that.
I'm sure you put them right, Kev.
I'm not sure that he takes any notice of me.
What an unbelievable! I mean, this guy, this barber, could get he could have the greatest betting advice. For free. While you sat there cutting your hair, and he's the one telling you what you should be doing.
Yeah. Yes. Actually, I don't want to diverge off the subject, but I don't know whether this is something you found yourself, but over the years, what I found is if anybody gets to know that I work in football and betting, instead of doing what I would do if I came to an expert and sort of fire question after question at them. What they do actually is just start talking themselves and telling me everything that they know, you know.
So, I mean, on the goals, I mean,
on the subject of goals, yeah. On the subject of goals, yes, you do get more. You do get more game, more goals at the end of the season. It ticks up a little bit on the penultimate weekend of the season, and then goes up a little bit more and more noticeably on the very final day of the season. So, for example, I mean, in the Premier League, when you get to the final day of the season, you're averaging just over 3 goals a game historically. You know, sort of 3-0, 3-1. And that's a bit more than you would usually get in the Premier League. But I don't know. Maybe people are expecting numbers to be a bit higher than 3. I don't know. You know, but it goes up a bit. It certainly goes up. You know,
not maybe by as much as what people think.
Again, I think it's the same sort of phenomenon. You know, you are going to get more goals on. In these tail end of the season games, but whether you're going to get enough additional goals to justify the odds you're being offered, I wouldn't be quite sure. You know, a bit like you, I tend to be very cautious at this stage of the season as well. You know, I mean, I've just said that probably the prices anticipate even more goals than you actually get. But I wouldn't want anyone to go away thinking, oh, Kevin Pulling's recommending that we bet under it on every game. You know, I'm much more likely to steer clear of a lot of these occasions. You know.
Yeah, there's no doubt I bet less at this stage of the season. Some people don't like to bet at the start of a campaign. I do. So do I,
Mark. Sorry to interrupt you.
No, that's fine.
But the reason is as well is at the start of the season I've got my views formed on all the teams and I may be right or maybe wrong but I'm confident in them and what I do know is that both of the teams are going to be fully competitive. I'm going to get a proper fixture. What I like less and less is what we come into now at the end of the season where. You're not sure how competitive the fixture is going to be. This team, that team, or both teams. You think it might be different than it would normally be, but you're not entirely sure how much different. You know, there's an awful lot more uncertainty. I feel at this stage. Yeah.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Kevin.
No problem at all. Glad to be here. Thanks, Mark.
Always brilliant to hear from Kevin Pullane. You can read more of him on the Racing Post Sport website, along with loads of other good content over there. Thank you so much for listening today. Mark, another good episode.
Yeah, absolutely. We've nearly done now, aren't we, for the season? We are at the business end where, as I was just saying to Kev, it's probably I start betting less because I do think it's harder. But it just means I can just sit there and watch the games and, you know, see all the teams going up and getting relegated. Always a great time of the season.
Does this mean that we're getting to the stage of the year where you're starting to look at your warm weather retreats for the summer, the Dubais, the Ibizas of the world, like the footballers?
Tenerife's already booked. I mean, I haven't been away to a hot country for a while now, so looking forward to El Tenerife, but we'll have to wait a little while.
Excellent. I never asked about your retreat last week. You went away on a little a caravan trip?
Yeah, it was fine. Kids liked it. I survived it. So everyone's a winner.
Absolutely. Great to have you once again, Mark. And as always, we always mention this, but it's important. Mark puts up a lot of selections throughout the course of this episode. Please don't feel the need to back them all. Only ever gamble with money you can afford to lose. We'll be back again next week for another episode of Mark Langdon's Bets Club.